The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Today on Grace in Focus, we are continuing a discussion from yesterday's episode, Did Jesus Want to Avoid the Cross? This is part two, and we have a little more to discuss about it. Thank you for being here today. This is Grace in Focus, a ministry of the Grace Evangelical Society. We come to you from North Texas, and our website is faithalone.org. Hope you'll go there to find out a lot more about this ministry. We also have a YouTube channel, YouTube Grace Evangelical Society, where we release 2 to 3 short videos per week. We hope you'll go there and watch our videos, enjoy them, like them, and subscribe to them. Once again, our website, faithalone.org. Now with today's question and answer discussion, here's Bob Wilkin, along with Ken Yates.
Bob, this is a part two of a question sent in by Matt. And in part one, we're talking about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. In September, you and I did a podcast where we suggested that Jesus was not, as it normally understood, saying, I don't want to go to the cross. He wanted to go to the cross, and he wanted to drink the cup.
And he was asking the Father to let him drink the cup.
That's right. Let me drink the cup. The wrath, let it be poured out of him. Let me drink it fully. Let it pass through me. And it wasn't that he was, you know, his human nature was saying, I don't want to go to the cross. And his divine nature was saying, yes. So that's our position.
And by the way, we forgot to mention in the last show that we published an article. It was a reprint of an article done by Dr. Craig Blazing on this question in our journal.
It originally appeared in the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society in 79. So it's an old article.
Yeah.
Right. But we did it, what, a year and a half ago or something?
Yeah, it'll probably be online around the time this show airs. If not, it'll be online soon. We put our journals up about 2 years after they come out. By the way, if you're not getting the journal, Ken is the jefe of the journal.
Yeah, I am.
The editor of the journal, and we love for people to subscribe to it. So if you're not getting it, feel free to sign up for it. Or you can see it online. You just be a couple of years behind.
Well, Matt asked the question. He said he listened to our episode in September, and maybe he listened to just part one that we just did.
Right.
And he says, would Hebrews 5, 7 through 9 contradict our position on what happened at Gethsemane? And I'll go ahead and read.
I'm going to take a wild guess and say no. Okay?
Well, he's wondering how we would interpret Hebrews 5, 7 through 9.
Why can't we be like all the other Bible teachers and just say no and move on? Why do we have to actually explain the passage? Right? Isn't it easier in a lot of other traditions? Because you just say, well, no, Calvin said this. Luther said this.
Right.
And you just cite somebody and you just move on.
The Puritan said this.
Yeah, so, right? But no, in our case, we got to actually go to the text, but that's a good thing, right?
Yes, it gives us headaches. I just had a Zoom class with a friend of mine, Dan, and he was asking a question about our passage, and his wife said, Dan, your eye's twitching. I said, that's the stress of trying to figure this stuff out. Okay, so here's the verses. Hebrews 5, 7, who in the days of his flesh, talking about the Lord, when he had offered up prayers and supplications, that certainly would include Gethsemane,
right?
Because he prayed 3 times in the Garden of Gethsemane, with vehement cries and tears, and that would certainly apply to Gethsemane. He was crying to him who was able to save him from death. And you could see where someone said, well, that's Gethsemane too, save me from this hour,
right?
You know, that kind of thing. And was heard because of his godly fear, though he was a son, yet, and I think this is the key, he learned obedience by the things he suffered. And so Matt, I think, and others might say, well, didn't he learn to obey here? So he perhaps didn't want to obey, let's say, in his human nature. He didn't want to obey, so he's in the garden.
That seems to be what Matt's implying.
Right, yeah. Or he might say, I hear this view, you know, that Jesus is crying out to the Father in the garden, save me from this hour. And then it says in verse 9, having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him.
So, okay, now, a couple things real quick. You said several times now, Father, save me from this hour.
Right.
Actually, Jesus never said that.
Exactly, yeah.
He doesn't say it here in this Hebrews passage. He says he's crying out to the one, how does he put it? Who was able to save him from death.
Right.
But if you look at the John 12:27 passage, The same language is used. He says, what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour?
That's where I was getting the hour from. Right, right.
But he says, but for this purpose I came. Father, glorify your name. In other words, he's asking the question rhetorically, and his answer is no.
Right.
I'm not going to say, Father, save me from this hour.
But the typical evangelical view is, in John 12, he's saying, hey, listen, no, I'm headed to the cross. No problem here. I'm one person. I'm united in this. I'm growing my two natures. But when I get to Gethsemane,
all of a sudden, I'm split now.
Now I'm split, and that's why I'm adding, now save me from this hour.
Right. I get it.
Yeah.
But you don't actually have that in John or Hebrews or anywhere else. And by the way, notice verse 9, and having been perfected, right? And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him. And you have a commentary on Hebrews, and this is the only place in the Bible where eternal salvation appears. And it's not referring to what we normally think of as eternal salvation, right?
Right. In Hebrews, salvation is being delivered from your enemies, ruling with Christ, being one of Christ's metikoi or one of Christ's companions, Psalm 45, 6 and 7, right? Those who are going to rule with Christ. He becomes the one who leads us to this. He is our example. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, right?
Right.
Fix your eyes on him.
But
you know,
wasn't he already perfect before he endured the cross?
Certainly in holiness and righteousness. So how did he learn obedience?
And how did he become perfect?
Exactly.
It's coming. It'll be here before you know it. What am I talking about? The Grace Evangelical Society's National Conference 2025, May 19th through 22nd at Camp Copus, an absolutely beautiful campground in North Texas, right on the lake with lots of recreation, great food, a great place to stay, wonderful fellowship, and wonderful free grace Bible teaching. Information and online registration now at faithalone.org/events. First-timers waive registration fees. faithalone.org/events.
How did he learn obedience?
And how did he become perfect?
Exactly. And so the typical evangelical view of this would be he was perfected because he was tempted not to go to the cross, but he learned through this to trust in the Lord. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane is saying, okay, I don't want to go, but I'm going to pray to you, and I'm going to get through this and do what you want me to do, even though right now I don't want to do it.
Yeah, which as I've said, makes no sense to me.
Yeah, but that is by far the most common way of seeing what's going on in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Right, I just don't get it. I understand where it's coming from, but it doesn't make sense to me because Jesus constantly wanted to do the will of the Father. He never wanted to contradict the will of the Father in his humanity or his deity. See, in my view, he wasn't just human. He was perfectly human. And so when it says he learned obedience and
was perfected.
Well, or the idea would be completed, brought to full maturity. I think the point here is he was sent to do this. And until he did it, his Messiah work was not yet perfected.
Well, you know, in Hebrews chapter 2, it says he became one of us. He shared in flesh and blood in order to be this one who leads us, this example for us.
Right.
So he learned obedience and was perfected in that he had never experienced suffering. He had never gone through what he had gone through. That's not the same thing as saying, okay, I'm going through this experience, and now I want to sin.
So what you're seeing it as is he experienced these things.
Right.
In other words, when it says he learned obedience, it's he experienced obedience. He'd always been someone who was holy and mature
and could not sin.
And that didn't change with the incarnation.
And it didn't change in the Garden of Gethsemane.
No. And it didn't change on the cross. And it never has changed. Doesn't Hebrews say, Hebrews 13:8, he was the same yesterday, today, and forever?
Right.
Well, how could he be the same all the time if there was a short period of time where he wanted to sin?
Wanted to disobey the Father, right?
Wouldn't that be sin?
Yeah, and that's what we discussed in part one. When does that happen? I don't want to do what I know the Father wants me to
right.
do. And you mentioned, well, if you're dwelling on it, perhaps there comes a point where you do it.
So right.
I'm going to imagine that most evangelicals would say, well, he never reached that point.
Right.
He still didn't want to do what the Father wanted him to do for that hour and a half or whatever it was. But he never
But he was kind of open.
Yes, he was, I'm asking you to let me do this. And that. So that's not simple. And you and I both have a problem with that.
So basically, the learned obedience is simply that he experienced these things.
In his incarnation.
You know, I have friends who hold the view that it's vitally important that Jesus didn't want to go to the cross because it shows that he was tempted like we were without sin. And sometimes these people actually say that Jesus could have sinned, but were fortunate he didn't. Quite fortunate, because if he had sinned, then there would have been no kingdom. There would have been no everlasting life for anybody.
And he would have ceased being God.
Well, and the universe would have come apart,
exactly.
Right? Because Jesus holds the universe together by his power. Everything would have collapsed if Jesus had sinned. And the idea that he could have sinned, to me, is absolutely contrary to the Word of God. It's like saying, well, in the future, when we're glorified, we could sin. No, we can't.
That's something that's rarely discussed, right? Will we be able to sin in eternity?
Right, and of course we won't.
Right.
But so I want to say, look, I don't think Hebrews 5, 7 through 9 is saying anything about the fact that Jesus learning obedience means somehow that he desired ever to disobey.
And I want to say also, Hebrews 5, 7 through 9 is not just Gethsemane. It's his time on the cross, you know, and
right.
So that's another issue here, because I think some people say...
Well, and his trials?
Sure.
His getting beaten and scourged?
Right. All through that, he learned, he experienced suffering, and he becomes an example for believers today who suffer for him, who will rule with him. That's the point.
Right. And 5:9, it's saying that he's the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him. The obedience, it means we're suffering with him.
Exactly.
And don't we see that in Romans, for example? Chapter 8, verses 17 and following.
Right.
Co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we may be glorified together with him.
Right.
Well, I know we're out of time again.
That's a great question,
but it
Matt.
It really is, Matt.
And as Bob said in part one, meditate on these things.
Yeah, you
this
may not
cool
agree
stuff.
With this. Don't feel like you got to agree. But what I want you to recognize here is this is not a slam dunk that Jesus wanted to avoid the cross. In my opinion, it's a slam dunk. He wanted to go to the cross.
And read the article in the journal on this.
Yeah.
I think it's called The Prayer in Gethsemane, A Prayer of Faith, or something like that. But it's in there.
Dr. Craig Blazin.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the question, Matt. And for all of you, until we meet again, remember,
keep grace in focus.
We invite you to check out our Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 5-minute YouTube videos at YouTube Grace Evangelical Society. You will love the content and learn a lot. Maybe you've got a question or comment or feedback. If so, please send us a message. Here's our email address. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Please make sure your question is as succinct and clear as possible. That would be a great big help. On our next episode, we hope you'll join us. We're going to be talking about using the four spiritual laws as a witnessing platform. Please join us, and until then, let's keep grace in focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.